Okay. So what's the largest grassroots religious movement in Latin America today? Just guess. Can you all see that screen? Looks like it's tilted more this way. Can you see it? Maybe I should move it though, because maybe we could, there's chairs over here. Can you all see? What's the largest movement in Latin America today? How many would say it's Pentecostal? Raise your hand. How many would say it's independent Pentecostal? Raise your hand. Okay, what's the alternative? Some of you are holding out. Well, let's not say the biggest denomination. The biggest denomination in Latin America is Catholic, period. But the biggest movement, a religious movement, where thousands are joining, and what do you say? Pentecostal? Let's take a look. Well, a little surprise. Most people say that it's going to be the Protestants, right? Actually, the largest grassroots movement today is the Catholic Charismatic movement in Latin America, just in terms of raw numbers. There are 75 million people, according to the data that we have, scattered throughout all the countries in Latin America that self-identify as Catholic and Pentecostal or Charismatic, which means they believe in the gifts of the Holy Spirit, maybe even practice them. Anyone ever been to a Catholic Charismatic service? What was your experience like? El Shaddai is a big one. Yes. They were not emphasizing Marian devotion.
They appointed a bishop to oversee the operations. There's always a tension between Mike Bernard.
Yes, that's right. Other experiences in the Catholic Charismatic movement or services? Who wants to share? Just quickly, your experiences. Yes. They're not always in the liturgical form. I went to some Catholic Charismatic services in Southern California, and I walked in. It was, first of all, a group about this size. No, maybe the hall was this big, but it was probably twice as many people, mostly on the younger side. Nobody know about the Catholic Church in America. Is that common? Younger Catholics going to church in larger numbers? And they had Christian T-shirts on, study Bibles, and they were selling literature out front, Bible stuff for evangelism, and they were singing camp songs, and they were speaking in tongues. It was in Spanish, and it was in tongues, and then they had prayer for healing afterwards. It went 2 hours long. Most masses are about an hour. 2 hours long, and they had the Virgin Mary was there, but she was to the right. Straight ahead was Jesus Christ off the cross. Somebody had painted a watercolor like this. But the crucifix was to the right with Guadalupe de Guadalupe. So there was respect for Guadalupe, but at the same time there was prayer for healing. And what was interesting about my experience, maybe yours is different, is that women were very prominent in the service. In fact, in the services that I visited, women, well, they wouldn't say they ran the service, but they said they were just overseeing while the father was in the other building. And I said, "That was a wonderful sermon you gave, Maria Elena." She said, "It wasn't a sermon. It was an exhortation, brother." It wasn't a sermon. It was an exhortation. No sermons, just exhortations. So in the Catholic Charismatic movement in Latin America, there's a space that's created for men, for young people, and for women. Interestingly enough, the Charismatic worship team on Wednesday night was also helping to lead the worship on Sunday morning at the Mass. Some of those young people were actually involved in that, leading the worship there too. So they were integrating the services into that. But interestingly enough, when I asked them, "Do you have any other big Bible studies here at this church, our CCD classes?" They said, "No, we just have a small prayer group on Wednesday night." Well, that's the one I just described to you. They described it as a small prayer group. I thought 4 or 5 people. Well, there's 130 people. So the movement goes under the radar screen because they're often called prayer services. They don't call them like a full service. So it seems like it's not as important as it maybe it is. So that's a major renewal movement, not only among Latinos in the United States, but also in Latin America. 75 million Latin American charismatics. There's only 120 million Catholic charismatics around the entire world. So the vast majority are in Latin America today. That's one of the trends we see taking place. Catholic charismatics make up 14.5%, or about 15% of all Latin Americans, of all traditions, just total population, about 15%. That's 1 in 6. Latin America contains 75 million Catholics, of which 120 total. Women are key, and bishops and many priests have gotten involved in the movement. In the U.S. today, in the United States, more than one in five Latino Catholics is also charismatic. So it's not just something south of the border. It's happening right here. That comes out to about 6.6 million people, if you add up the numbers, Latinos that are charismatic. In our survey, this is where the data comes from for this point. We asked them, are you Catholic? They had to say yes to be included. Are you charismatic? They had to say yes. And then are you born again? They had to say yes to all three to be included in the response question to this question for the Catholic charismatic number of 6.6 million in the United States. Yes. Yes, it is universal. That's right. Yeah, in the United States and in Latin America, the term born again has more of the experience of a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That's what the question is. Because we asked them, Latinos actually answered the survey themselves. On the phone, they were interviewed, but it was anonymous. Do you consider yourself a born-again Christian? That is, someone who's had a personal conversion experience with Jesus Christ. And they would say, the ones that answered for this question point said yes. So 6.6 million of the 42 million Latinos in the United States said yes to that question. They were Catholic. And they also said they were charismatic. So it means different things for different people, different parts of the world, but it is a global movement, but they tend to downplay it. In many churches, they say just a prayer group, right? Oftentimes called the prayer meeting. So these are some of the numbers. Let's move on now. So what percentage of U.S. Latino Catholics are charismatic? 22%, I mentioned earlier. Don't need to belabor that point. If the Catholic charismatic movement, whoops. Don't look up there. If the Catholic charismatic movement is growing, then the Protestant movement is declining, right? The Catholic charismatic movement is one of the most dynamic movements in Latin America today. Then can both be growing at the same time? They can. Now, how did that happen? Because you can have numerical growth and you can have statistical growth or percentage growth. And that's what's happening in Latin America today. Protestantism is going through explosive growth right now, as many of you know. Now, today, there are 90 million Protestants in Latin America. 90 million. If you add up all the countries. Brazil is the biggest, by the way. And I'll show you a chart in a minute. What would you have guessed prior to this? If I asked you how many Protestants were in Latin America, be honest, we're all among friends, what would you have guessed? Because Latin America is known as being primarily Catholic, right? What would you have guessed? 500,000. Okay? Anyone else? 500,000. Well, 90 million. So there's a big population. It's growing very rapidly. We have people in our fellowship here who are Protestants from Latin America. About 20,000 people join the Protestant movement every day in Latin America. About 20,000 a day. Among Latinos in the United States, among Latinos here in the U.S., I'm going to go back and forth between the two regions. Father Andrew Greeley, of the University of Chicago, a sociologist and also a priest, claims that up to 600,000 Latinos may be converting every year to some form of Christianity other than Catholicism, Latinos, in the United States. He calls it the worst hemorrhaging in U.S. Catholic history because people are joining other groups. So that's not just happening in the United States, but also in Latin America. We're seeing some major shifts. Today, Protestants make up about 17% of Latin America. About 17%, so a little more than 1 in 6 Latin Americans today are Protestant. It's still pretty small compared to the Catholic population. On any given Sunday, scholars are now arguing, this is a popular statement in many different books, on any given Sunday there are more Protestants attending church than Catholics, actually attending. It doesn't mean that they're not Christian, but just actually showing up to Mass or showing up to the Protestant services, if you add them up in many of the towns. Protestants are projected to grow to 21% by 2025. So 21. So we're seeing movement there, and you can see the data here, going from 89 million in 2000, they're projecting to, where is it, 144 million by 2025. So we're seeing the growth of Protestants in Latin America of thousands. There's just many different kinds of denominations. There's just literally thousands of them. All right. So what groups are driving this? We talked about this already. I'm not going to belabor it. The Pentecostal and evangelical groups, both, not just Pentecostal, are driving this growth. There are about 66 million Latino Pentecostals in Latin America. How many Catholics were there? About 75 million. So there are a lot more Latino Catholic charismatics than there are Protestant Pentecostals, which is counterintuitive. You'd think it would be just the opposite, but that's not what the data is showing. There are a lot more Catholics, and there are a lot more of them, at least within their traditions, that have embraced the charismatic movement, either because they went into the movement and returned to Catholicism, or because they just chose to do both, but never leave Catholicism, but embrace the gifts of the Holy Spirit. So there are different ways you can do that. In Latin America today, there are 1,991 Pentecostal denominations. 1,991 that have registered as independent movements. Of those, 1,767 are independent. So the vast majority of Pentecostal denominations in Latin America today have no ties to the United States Pentecostal Church. They don't have any ties. They're independent. They were founded in Bolivia or Peru or Guatemala or Brazil. And they might listen to some of the radio shows. They might have friendly contact. They might buy a book by somebody. But they're not run by Americans who give orders to the people down there, which is often a perception. There's a book by David Stoll called Is Latin American Turning Protestant? There's a picture of Jimmy Swaggart on the cover going like this. Jimmy Swaggart's on the cover. He was a Pentecostal preacher. That's the picture of Latin American Protestantism to many Americans, American scholars. It's missionaries going down there controlling all the Protestants, when in fact there's an indigenization of Protestants in Latin America. So it's not just missionary controlled. Here we can look at, we'll just skip through this part, just some of the data here to show. If you add up all Catholics and Protestants together that are charismatic, it's about 140 million people. So the Catholic, if you add up all Catholic charismatics and Protestant charismatics, put them in one group in Latin America, it's 27% of the population. 27%. So more than, what is that? More than one in four Latin Americans today are the Catholic charismatic or Protestant Pentecostal when you blend them together. So what does that tell us? If you have a ministry in Latin America that's not charismatic, it's something to take a look at. You don't have to embrace it, but just understand it, because it's a movement that you have to deal with. And they need to do the same. They need to look at the historic churches as well. I'm not going to break this down, but I'll just show you a couple things. According to the data, Brazil by far is the biggest country in Latin America and also the biggest population. According to the recent data coming out, 61% Catholic, 29% Protestant. So one in three Brazilians are Protestant today. Of that number, 24% are Pentecostal or charismatic of some kind. And then when you combine them all together, it's significant. Then you go to Chile, Guatemala, El Salvador, Puerto Rico, United States. These data are old. They're from 2000. But you see definite growth of the Protestant movement. The largest countries, Brazil, 29%. That's this. Chile, 27%. Guatemala, 25%. El Salvador, 22%. Puerto Rico, 22%. And the U.S., 20%. So these are some of the findings. There's more. They're available. If you want a copy, I think I put some of my cards back there, a few of my cards. I can email you some of that information if you need it or would like to see it. It comes from the World Christian Encyclopedia and the World Christian Database that I mentioned earlier to you. I asked them to do a special run of these numbers for this data presentation, which I presented earlier for another event. All right. So how large is the Latino Protestant community in the United States? There are 30 million Latino Catholics in the United States. There are more Latino Catholics in the U.S. than all white mainline Protestants combined, 22 million. So there are more Latino Catholics, just Catholic Latinos, than all mainline white Protestants combined. So we're seeing major growth in the Catholic population. In fact, people are saying today that the American Catholic Church is 40% Latino. And the growth, the Catholic Church in America is growing, by the way, growing a lot. And that growth is being heavily driven by Latinos, not just Latinos, maybe 40%. Unfortunately, only 8% of all the priests are Latino, though. Can you imagine what kind of revolution it would be if 40% of all the bishops in America, the Catholic Church, and all the priests were actually Latino too? How that would change the dynamics of ministry, how they would go about that differently. So right now there's a lag between the 40% and the 8%, but it's catching up slowly. Among the Protestants, there are 8 million Latino Protestants in the U.S. The more Latino Protestants than there are Jews, or Muslims, or Episcopalians in America today. So it's growing very rapidly. Yes? Episcopalians are Protestant.
Yes. Then why are more Latino Protestants, I mean, Episcopalians, do you have data for white and Hispanic Episcopalians?
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay.
It's in the national survey. But I can tell you now, there's 102,000 according to our survey, which is bigger than your own denomination reports, but that's because your denomination only reports self-reporting. Where ours is a national survey, we ask anybody who answers the phone. If they say they're Episcopal, then we list them as Episcopal. And that came out to 102,000. I think they were ranked like 11th or 12th in the nation, which is big among Latinos. Now, what was the earlier question, though? Because I don't think I got to the point of it.
Well, you mentioned that there are more Latino Protestants than Jews or Muslims or Christians.
Yeah, as a raw number.
Okay.
For example, not all Episcopalians are Latinos, right?
Right.
So there's maybe 2.5 million or 2.9 million whatever the number would be. So what I'm suggesting is that the Latino Protestant community is larger than a lot of traditions that we normally associate as being very large in America. Obviously, some of those Episcopalians would overlap, be 100,000. But what I'm saying is that as a movement, people tend to think the Episcopal Church is big, right? The Jewish community is huge. The Muslim community is big. But what I'm simply saying is, by point of comparison, the Latino Protestant community is bigger than most people realize. Okay. I talked about Andrew Greeley's comment about the defections, up to 600,000 a year. I think it's a bit high, but that's what he has based on his data runs, the University of Chicago. He's a Catholic priest who writes a lot about demographic shifts. All right. So what factors are driving this Pentecostal growth? There's an emphasis on spiritual gifts of the Holy Spirit and spiritual warfare tend to be a major theme. You don't see this theme as much in a lot of historic churches, right? Spiritual warfare may come up in some churches, but not as much in others. It's one of their themes. Let's look at some of the reasons why people convert. One of the reasons why is that they will tell you, if you ask them, why have you converted? One of the responses they give is because Pentecostals focus on a personal born-again relationship with Jesus Christ as their Savior and Lord. Not all denominations emphasize that. Someone say you can if you want to, but you don't have to. The Pentecostals tend to insist on it as a matter of rule. Second, they focus a lot on personal evangelism, going out and trying to convert people to their faith. So the reasons why they're growing are not necessarily a mystery. They make sense, right? If you share your faith with somebody and they convert, the movement's going to grow. Third, emphasis on the spiritual gifts and spiritual power. There's a lot of talk about power. Have you heard that song? It goes, "There is power, power, wonder-working power," right? In the blood. It's one of those kinds of songs. That kind of, if you look at some of the Pentecostal hymnody, a lot of talk about power, empowerment, called and empowered, and it resonates with people, many of which are powerless. So there's no mystery behind it. It's not like they're doing something that's tricky. It's they want a religion that's going to promise them something and possibly give them something. Focus on divine healing. I talked about that earlier. If you're sick and you're in Latin America, you have no health insurance. Your job's not going to cover the on-the-job injury. Say you got your hand chopped up in a meat grinder. You work in a slaughterhouse. You're on your own. Or let's say somebody gets sick. They have tuberculosis or cancer. Where do you go? Who do you go to if you can't afford to go to a doctor? You go to somebody who can pray for you. And who has a reputation of maybe performing healings. Focus on spiritual warfare and the naming of evil spirits. This is very popular today. I don't know if that'll be a long term, but naming the spirit of alcoholism, naming the spirit of greed or whatever it might be, naming the spirit, I think is very empowering, actually, to name it. Whether or not there's really any power behind it is another question. You decide that. But there's power in naming your oppressor, naming the problem, not running from it, not acting as if it doesn't exist. I'm not dying. No, you are dying. So you name the thing that's causing you to die. So there's some of that we see in some of the circles today in Latin America. A focus on morality and behavior. In many of these independent movements, if you convert, you're not allowed to drink alcohol. No alcohol, no smoking, no gambling, no going to R-rated movies sometimes, right? It's true. You cannot do those things in many of the churches. Not just in Latin America, but we're talking about Latin America right now. Focus on women in ministry. You know, Latin America, you have the Catholic Church with a lot of opportunities for women in ministry and in lay ministry, but if you want to be in the ordained ministry, what's your alternative? If you go into the Assemblies of God, you could be ordained. You could be an evangelist. You could be a missionary. You could be a church planter. It's possible to do those things in this context there. So that may be one reason. I wrote a study on women in ministry, and I asked them, why did you convert? And some of the women that I talked about the fact that they could become a minister or an evangelist in this movement as one of the reasons why. Focus on evangelism and discipleship. They're very evangelistic. I think a lot of you have said the Crusades, you see radio, television, ministry, all that kind of stuff. Focus on church planting. This is the single, probably, if I had to list one practical reason why they grow so fast, the single most practical reason, in addition to prayer and fasting for revival, the second most practical sociological reason is church planting. You plant churches, you create a whole new pastoral structure. So, I mean, if you have one church with 10,000 people, you usually have one senior pastor, maybe two. Usually. You might have more, but usually. You might have 10 associate pastors, maybe. But if you took that 10,000 people and divided it up into 20 churches, now you can have 20 senior pastors, right? So you're mobilizing the masses at a much higher level when you plant new churches. You're getting more people involved that might go from one church with 500 people to a new church plant. They're all excited about their faith now. And they start a church because they just found a new church. So they pass that enthusiasm on from one church after the other. And that's why the movement grows, because you can convert people, but if they have no place to go, the movement's going to eventually die out. The planting of the churches is the key to keeping those movement and to raising the young people in the next generation. So that's one of the factors as well. And finally, for this fourth trend, Pentecostal focuses on powerful worship. I heard you had a powerful worship service two nights ago. Is that true? Here? In another room in the chapel? I don't know. Yes? No? Okay. Some people look. Okay. It was a unique experience. Powerful and unique. You picked the word. But anyways, they focus on worship, usually with tambourines, right? Celebratory, very expressive. You can raise your hands. You can sit. You can kneel. You can pray. The different types of things. They tend to do a lot of that in a lot of these groups. All right. We also see the indigenization of Latin American Pentecostalism. This has been a theme throughout the day. But the indigenization is the key. What do I mean by indigenization? I mean local people embracing the message for themselves and articulating it in the language, the values, and the customs of their own people. Not just preaching like Jimmy Swagger. Not just wearing it. Not just mouthing it. But actually using the language. Using the cultural values. Trying to make connections. Using even names for God. Might be part of the culture that other missionaries wouldn't use. But the indigenous people do. Because they understand what it means. It's okay. When Matteo Ricci, a famous Jesuit, went to China to preach the gospel, he was confronted with the name for God. Some missionaries said, you have to use the Western name for God. He said, no, I'm going to use Shang Ti. Shang Ti is a Chinese name for God. That's the name I'll use. And as you know from your history of Christianity, Matteo Ricci was very successful in China because he indigenized to the degree that he could his message to their people. And so we see that taking place in Latin America. In the United States, we also see this phenomenon taking place to answer your question earlier, these are the largest Protestant denominations in the United States. By the way, the Episcopalian would be right here, 11, 103. Based on our national survey we did, Spanish and English bilingual survey, 2,300 people, Assemblies of God, followed by two indigenous Pentecostal bodies, two Baptist bodies, Adventist, Apostolic, one is Pentecostal, also indigenous, Lutheran, Methodist, Presbyterian, Episcopal. Now, how would this be different for the white American community? What do you think? If I asked you, what are the largest white Protestant denominations in America, do you think it'd be different or the same? Southern Baptist would be the biggest. What else? Who else would be at the top? The Methodists, the Lutherans, Episcopals. It'd almost be the opposite, right? Kind of just swing this around. Among the white community. But among Latinos, you have three Pentecostal bodies, two Baptists, Adventists, another Pentecostal body, and then your mainlines. They're still large, but as you can see the numbers there, but there's movement taking place there. So in the Latino community, it's not quite the same. Now, by the way, I just picked the one that was the Christian ones. If I took just the responses to the survey, guess what the largest group is? Guess what it would be? Jehovah's Witnesses would be 800,000. Mormons would be about 8th at 260,000. And then you would have independents would be huge. The independents would be huge in here. And I'm just showing you denominations that we can identify on the survey instrument. But we also have, are you independent? They would say, yes, I'm independent. But the independents were about 2.5 million. So they were also big as a movement. All right, I'm almost done here. So this indigenization is not only taking place through evangelism, but the indigenization is taking place through pop culture. People think you have to evangelize by just preaching a message. You can evangelize and spread your message through music, through drama, through art. And this is what's happening in the United States and also Latin America. I go into a lot of Latin American churches today, here, and I see music tapes being sold, and the new Christian singers, from Brazil or from Colombia. They're happy about that. Jackie Velasquez. Anybody heard of Jackie Velasquez? A few of you, right? She's won a Latin Grammy. That's in a secular Grammy. MTV's videos, Fernando Ortega from New Mexico. He's big. So this indigenization is not just about preaching theology. It's communicating the message through other cultural venues. Art, music, drama, literature. I was in Santa Barbara about 2 years ago. There was a play called Straight from the Hood. It was called Straight from the Hood. The hood in America means what? The inner city, the neighborhood. And I walked in, and there are 1,000 Latino youth there, at least 1,000. And I'm not exaggerating. I count numbers for a living. And there was at least 1,000. And I walked in, and they brought this lowrider car coming in. Da, 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 da. Music's blaring. Lowrider car. In America, excuse me. The lowrider car is what a lot of Mexican American second and third generation youth like. My father used to have one too. I mean, you know, you put the car down a little bit and you cruise around thinking you're really cool, whatever. So anyways, that's what it was. They brought a lowrider car. They had a play. Most Christian plays are very nice. Everybody lives happily ever after. In this play, somebody got shot. They brought on a shotgun on the stage. They had blanks in the shotgun. They killed a guy. Another person was strung out on drugs, on heroin. They dramatized what it was like living in the inner city. It was really, really powerful. There was a group called Victory Outreach. They're a charismatic group. The targets, drug addicts, alcoholics, ex-cons, prostitutes. That's who they intentionally target, by the way, part of their ministry description, found in 1967 in East LA. And their whole ministry targets that group. And it was very powerful. So drama is another thing that's being used a lot. TV is drama too, isn't it? Isn't TV just an extension of drama? Telenovelas? Exactly. So, also we're seeing the Latino Pentecostal social outreach and gang prevention. I know a lot of pastors, as many of you might as well, say, why are they converting? Because they're addressing social needs, poverty, homelessness, right? But they're also addressing the young people. There's a lot of pressure to get involved in gangs. My father was a gang member. I started a gang at 11. Believe it or not, yeah. It's a miracle what God can do. I didn't care if I lived or died. And everybody in the community. I mean, it was a tough community. And, you know, challenged people to fight. I was always in trouble. And then I had a pretty radical change in my life. But up until that point, I didn't care. Because it was generational. It's passed on generationally. The attitude, the tattoos on the arms, the walking around, how you handle yourself, the whole nine yards. You have to change the youth culture. That's another important element. It's not enough just to preach a message. Jesus is the Lord. Do you believe in sanctification? The kid's saying, what's sanctification? I don't know what sanctification is, but I like Carlos Santana's music. I like his music. Or I like lowriders. So you do a play or a drama or a skit that brings that into there. You use that culture and you transform it and give it a different message. And the young people are willing to listen. I can relate to that music. Right? The guy that I met had long hair. He was a hippie. I was talking with our Native American speaker, our brother, and he said that he had the same experience. He was a hippie and he walked around the bell-bottom jeans, and had a whole different story. He didn't dress in a three-piece suit. He was relating to the culture where he was at. And so if the church wants to be relevant, that's part of it. Where are the youth at? I talked with one elder said, but that's compromising. Can't do that. You can't lower yourself to that level. Because when you do that, you make the whole church look bad. And not only that, it's compromised because we shouldn't have guns in the house of God anyway. Or we shouldn't have these plays because they glorify alcoholism. And I said, no, they're not glorifying them. They're showing the tragedy of them. Well, that's too negative for people. That's the reality of the inner city. That's the reality. Speak to people where they're at. So what impact is this growth having on Latin America? What is it having on the United States? We're seeing the Latin American evangelization in the United States. I call it the Back to the Future phenomenon, right? A lot of these Pentecostal and Baptist groups and other groups that began here, right? Evangelical Free, they went to Latin America. Guess what? Now they're coming back, and guess what they're doing? They're trying to evangelize not only Latinos here, but African Americans, Asian American, Native Americans, Anglos, everybody. The Universal Church of the Kingdom of God. I went to one of those services in downtown Los Angeles. They had 1,500 people. They had the Brazilians in the back talking in Portuguese. I could hear that. Then they had the Mexican American young guy up front who was an ex-gang member preaching to the crowd. Then they had a healing service. They took off all their shoes and they walked through a healing gauntlet and they prayed for healing for all their things they were suffering. There was a lot of suffering in the immigrant community. They were praying for them right there on the spot. And they said, so I asked them, so what is your goal here? Why are you here in the United States? Our goal is to have a church in every major city in America and to evangelize the Latino community and then the American community. That's what we're targeting. That's our goal in the future. We're targeting everybody in America, but we start with our own people. We branch out from there, the Latin Americans. Iglesia de Cristo, Llamada Final, Pentecostal Church of God, the Apostolic Church from Mexico. There are so many. I told you there are 1,900 denominations in Latin America. Not everyone has got missionaries in the United States, but many do. They're targeting the immigrant community first as a beachfront for the rest. Because those immigrants have kids who are born here. They're going to grow up speaking English. So they want to reach that second, third generation and thus all their friends. So it's a natural segue. Okay, last couple final points here. So we'll... Huh?
Hurry up if you want to make your plane.
Are you keeping time for me?
Yeah.
Okay. How much time do I have?
No time.
I have no time. Okay. Last couple. Trend number 7. Catholic versus Pentecostal conflict. We're seeing some of that in Latin America. Hate to be negative, but that's the truth. Because the Protestants are saying, we want equal rights. We want equal vote. Catholics say, we don't want separation of church and state. Because the Catholic Church is being honored by the state. They're saying, yeah, but it's only your church, not ours. So let's make it pluralistic. Let's separate them so we can all be honored equally. So some Catholics are resisting that. Some Protestants want it just for their own personal growth. All right. I'm going to move on here. Oh, no, last point. I need to go on this one. There's the rise of Latin American political parties, Christian parties, both Catholic and Protestant, trying to fight for new power there. Finally, Despite the conflicts, positive trends, yes. Catholic Pentecostal cooperation on family and social issues and some political issues. So Catholics and Protestants are working together. Opposition to abortion. They're working together in opposition to homosexual marriage, fighting corruption and dictatorships, and they're fighting for human rights. Sometimes both groups have been on the wrong side of both those issues, as you know. But we're seeing the beginning of a trend in that country. And finally, so what three possible solutions do we have? Well, they can mutually reinforcing flight from the world, or they both kind of run away from the world and neglect social issues. Second option is working whereby Catholics would support the existing government structures while Pentecostals would defend a free market capitalism so they can do their own thing, or where they both work together on social issues. So these are some of the trends we see in Latin America. Our Latin American experts here can go into more detail after we go, but I want to thank you for a wonderful time. You've been fantastic. God bless you all, and I wish you all a happy, joyful, spirit-filled life. Thank you.